Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Curio Wellness, as well as Raskin Global. And all of our sponsors put us out on the road. We're going to be at Beaumont on Thursday with a really special show over in Catonsville. Big appreciation to Tom Quirk for coming over and hanging out as well and talking some democracy with me, as well as Baltimore County Council issues. Next Wednesday, we're going to be back in Baltimore County. We're going to be at Coopers North up in Timonium and Mays Chapel. Got some great guest. Going to be talking about LLS and all the things they do Burger of the Month up there for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. My friend, the Schultz family, Ron Schultz, Nick Schultz, Curtis Schultz. Everybody remembers Curtis Schultz. Will be joining us at Coopers North. Also, the 30th, we'll be at Coco's Pub. I am wearing my Coco's Pub shirt. My wife and I were going to go over and have the burger of the night on Tuesday night, but we bonked out with all the wind. But I love you, Marcella. We'll get over there in a couple of weeks. And Luke Jones is here. He had a pretty good lunch on. They say there are no free lunches. They've never met Jerry Coleman, but you were there on Tuesday for the Liars luncheon. What do they call it? The pre-draft media. What do they
I
call
think
it?
it's the pre-draft press conference and luncheon is the official term.
They don't even call it media anymore since they threw me out and I named the damn thing. So, do tell about the ravioli and the steak and all the things that they took good care of you out there with Larry Frank and the classic catering people.
It was a very nice lunch, I will say that. I don't think fans care to hear about that as much as what was said, but it's the Liars' lunch, and it wasn't. If you're going into it expecting these earth-shattering revelations, then you haven't paid close attention to the Liars' Luncheon over the years. But at the same time, as if I think back over the years, I don't think there was nearly, I don't know if there's ever that much truly blatant lying. I think they just speak in such generalities, and they're very careful with what they say, and they're just not saying a whole
I
lot. But
promise you, Eric lied to me when he told me he was going to draft Marte
oh, it's
Jenkins.
happened. It's
Midnight Friday.
absolutely happened. Don't get me wrong, but
And I know they lied to Peter King when they told him they were going to draft Chad Henne.
right.
No, I mean, I'm just, I can
No,
go through just the ones off the top of my
I
head
guess my
that would
point
have
is,
just been straight out, like, deceptive. And, that really changed in when Billick left, right? Literally, when that era ended, but John Soper, I mean, John's. We'll do a whole segment one day on John's honor, but the world changed, the internet changed, all that happened, Twitter, all that happened on John's watch in 8, 9, 10, 11, and then it slipped down the mountain. I have videos of Eric DaCosta coming out with Brian Billick in 2009 and 10 with you when you first came here, and sitting and really openly discussing a lot of this stuff. Now it's all for Ravens.com. It's all to be asked by insiders. It's employees talking to employees about football. So it's very, very measured. I mean, it's not Hard Knocks of 2001.
no, it's not. And at the same time, it's one of those few instances where I understand that they're not going to come out and talk about the draft prospects that they really, really like. I mean, if they're going to do anything, they're going to speak in generalities, or there might be a little bit of deflecting going on, as you mentioned. It still does happen. I'm not sure there was really anything I'd take away from Tuesday's session that I would say, oh, that's you know what. I think they're just very careful and measured. I mean, I think the biggest takeaway, and this isn't a draft prospect, but it certainly could impact how they approach this draft, is we heard John Harbaugh at the owners' meetings a couple weeks ago, basically say, quote, that he fully expected Mark Andrews to be on the 2025 Ravens. Eric DaCosta did not speak in those terms. I mean, his quote was, I never know what's going to happen, and I would never want to say this or that. But I can tell you this, Mark Andrews is a warrior and he's played his butt off for us. And then he went on to talk about his attributes. But he finished by saying, you
That's the
just
same
never.
thing he's saying to the Giants when he's trying to trade him
Sure,
at day
sure.
two,
So
right?
and let me be clear. I saw some people, everyone's trying to read the tea leaves. The fans have seen enough of these pre-draft press conferences, these liars' luncheons to try to interpret. I don't think that means that Mark Andrews is definitively gone either by any stretch of the imagination. I think Eric is truly saying, I don't really know what's going to happen here. Look, we paid Marcus $4 million bonus earlier this offseason. On the one hand, That should make him a little more attractive to teams that if they're only having to pay him $7 million as opposed to $11 million. On the flip side, we've paid him $4 million. And, unless, my understanding is that happened. I mean, sometimes you'll see a bonus delayed because they're a player is in limbo a little bit, but I don't know that to be true. So, but if it is a case that he's only owed $7 million, if you're the Ravens, you're saying, well, our asking price for him has gone up a little bit because we paid him $4 million and he's more attractive for other teams financially. So I think Eric is saying this. I think if the unfiltered version of what he said on Tuesday is, look, we really like Mark Andrews. He's been a great player for us for a long time, but he's in the final year of his contract. He's entering his age 30 season. We have Isaiah Likely, who's also going into a contract year and is 4.5 years younger. All things being equal, we'd rather extend him if we can only extend one. So we're not just going to give Mark away because he's still important to our success, regardless of what happened in Buffalo last January. But if another team out there can't land the Penn State tight end or the Michigan tight end, we're talking about the kind of top heavy guys.
What's his value, dude? Let's get to the bottom
I mean,
line here, because
Nasir, it's
that's
hard for me to say that. I mean, I
what's his
think.
value to the Ravens? Why would they want to keep him versus obviously Isaiah
Well,
Likely gets hurt or
you
whatever?
obviously want to pick. Yeah, I mean that. I think the value to the Ravens is obvious. I mean, you look at what he's been, and I would also say there's also the element of how's your quarterback going to feel about if you're trading Mark Andrews. So that's where, if some team's offering a 6th-round pick, it's like, what's the point?
Well, that would be my,
But
that's where I am with Eric, because I always get into his head and say, all right, it's not a first rounder, right? Would you agree it's not a second rounder?
no,
Okay. All right.
but
So now we're into Friday night. Pick 83 or pick 91 or pick 104, whatever, pick your pick, right? That the way they're going to look at it is Tampa Bay wants him now, and they're going to give us pick whatever. 100,
and
make it an even number, right? And say, all right, so what player are we getting there? What are we taking away from this year's team? What are we adding to this year's team? Maybe that's our outside linebacker that we like. Maybe that's a defensive line piece. Maybe that's an offensive line piece. But it's going to be a human being. I don't,
yeah.
would they trade Mark Andrews for Roger Rosengarten right now? I don't know. I mean, there's a great example of something they would look at and say, is that interesting? That's a second round pick. If they're not
Well,
going to get
yeah.
something at least that good, why would they just give Mark Andrews away?
Well, I think you have to look at it through the lens of, okay, what is his value in 2025? What is his value if you let him walk next offseason? So you're thinking about it in terms of, regardless of what his trade value might be today, we would both agree that assuming he has a healthy representative year, even if it's not, not the Mark Andrews of 2021, but is still a productive player, he's going to fetch a pretty good contract in free agency next offseason,
And that means
correct?
he's going to get them a
So then
four.
you look at what a 4th-round comp pick would be, which keep in mind that would be the 2027 draft you're talking about. So to me, you're looking at it through the lens of can you get that value? However, you would be getting that pick 2 years earlier. Would you do it for a 4th-round pick? I think it depends where in the 4th round. If it's
You
the
sound like
top,
Steve Bisciotti saying all this, by the way, because this is the way they talk
but that's
about
how
it,
you have
right?
to,
Literally, this is how Bisciotti looks at it.
but I would also say, even with that line of thinking, don't discredit what value Mark Andrews can bring you being on your team in 2025. One criticism that I've had of them at times is I think, especially in this Lamar Jackson era, where you had, especially when Lamar was still on his rookie contract, that one reason I didn't love the Orlando Brown trade, not because the value wasn't good. I think the value was perfectly fine, what they ended up getting, but you didn't have the player for that season, and that happened to be a season where Ronnie Stanley was not healthy, and you had Alejandro Villanueva playing left tackle when he wasn't even good enough to be a right tackle anymore, and it was just a disaster. So, obviously this is a different scenario where you have Likely, you have Charlie Kohler, who I think, has been their number three tight end. I think they'd be okay with him being their number two tight end. And look, you might draft a tight end then. I mean, I asked Eric DaCosta, as far as the Ravens, regardless of what happens with Andrews here over the next week or 2 weeks, let's say, because I don't know you get out of the draft, then I'm starting to wonder, okay, if you're going to trade them, then what are you getting? Unless you're trading for a position player at another, at another spot or something creative like that. But I think when you look at this tight end group, there's going to be a lot of turnover here. Andrews, pending free agent. Isaiah Likely, pending free agent. Charlie Kohler, pending free agent. Patrick Ricard is on a 1-year deal. So you're talking about your entire tight end group, your entire tight end room could be hypothetically different next year. Now, if they do move Andrew, whether they trade him or whether they just let him walk, I fully expect them to do everything they can to re-sign Isaiah Likely. I think you have to under that scenario. But until they have it done, you're still asking the question. So that's where I said, Eric, even if it would create a roster crunch in 2025, do you have to look at taking a tight end? Because that entire room hypothetically could be gone next year. And I think, and let me be clear, I don't think that means that the Ravens are going to draft Tyler Warren or Colston Loveland from Michigan, but I think you do have to look at possibly adding a tight end in the middle rounds. And then what does that do? It's not impossible to carry four tight ends on your roster. Let me be clear about that, especially if the guy coming in can contribute on some special teams and things like that. I mean, that it's not unheard of. They've had four tight ends on their roster before, but that's the kind of thing you're thinking about right now when you have a position group where everyone's on an expiring deal. So I think they have a lot to think about right there. And again, if it plays out where Mark Andrews is just on the team in 2025, you're not upset about that. I mean, why would you be? And I know people are still ticked about January, and I hear all that, but you're still talking about someone who's the all-time leader in touchdown receptions for this franchise. Even if that means he starts to be phased out a little bit more and Likely's role increases a little bit more in 2025, you'd still like to have him because as part of Eric's answer to my question about the tight end position, he said, look, if there's a player that is at that spot and is overwhelmingly the highest player on our board as far as available players, then we kind of have to take them because you never know. And he cited 2021 when they lost Dobbins, Gus Edwards, and Justice Hill all within what, 9 days, I think it was. They lost all those guys for the season. So you never really know what's going to happen on that front. So, even tight end, which is one of those positions that at face value, there's nothing to be concerned about as it pertains to 2025. I mean, it's a very deep, very good group, but the draft is not just about 2025. The draft is about setting up your roster as well as you can for the next 2, 3, 4 years. So with those 11 picks, even if Andrews stays put, would I be shocked if they're taking a tight end and, sometime day three? No, not at all, because of just how that lays out. So, but I did find it interesting that, Harbaugh was as direct as he was 2 weeks ago, as in terms of his be stating a belief that Andrews would be here. And we didn't hear that from Eric DaCosta on Tuesday. But that said, I don't think that necessarily means that Andrews is definitely going to be dealt. I just think it means that they genuinely have an open mind that if some team that's maybe trying to draft Ty Warren or trying to draft Loveland or some of the other tight ends that, maybe that second tier of tight ends in this draft class, if they whiff on that guy, or heaven forbid, maybe their tight end gets hurt during off-season training program, which has started for a lot of teams at this point, then it's a different conversation that you're having. So, the
Well, it also
Ravens
can't be
traded.
understated how important the position is to Lamar.
Oh, no question.
I mean,
That's where
it's
I
a
would
different
say,
position in this offense than even what DeAndre Hopkins is going to do,
yeah.
especially when you have the beast in the backfield that I once said they'll win the Super Bowl with him. So we'll see if that holds up this year. Got one more year for me to wear my Derrick Henry jersey, but I'm the world's biggest Derrick Henry fan for everything we saw this year. Still, that being said, tight end was supposed to catch the ball to put them into the next round. It didn't. They went to the tight end in the plays that Andrews dropped the ball that we remember. The tight end
Sure.
was going to fix it for them, was going to
Yeah.
finish it for them.
Yeah. And he dropped the ball.
Guess
So
who's the finisher for Tom Brady? Name a wide receiver or a running back that was a finisher for Tom Brady. Just Gronkowski. That's it, right? I mean, finisher. You know what I mean? When you need to win a battle, Travis Kelce. You win a battle having tight ends that matter. So if they feel that way about Likely, you know what I mean? If they feel like he's going to be a Pro Bowl elite kind of, you know, that sort of thing, or if Lamar feels that way about him, or Monken feels that way about him. I'm fascinated to see them march on without him. I saw he's got a commercial. Couldn't make it to the podium in Buffalo, but he's got a military commercial. I don't I just need to, because there has to be some comedy in the show,
That's
or
fine.
otherwise I'd cry. I mean, it's just amazing. But
Well,
in the Andrews thing, like, look, I could talk about him not coming to the podium. You could talk about $4 million. We could talk about Cat. But the bottom line is, do they want to play a season with him or without him? And what is he at this point? And what is he to other teams? Because if all he is to another team's 114th pick in the draft, to your point, we'll play with him. We've already paid him. We,
yeah.
you know, we like him. All the things that they've said, that John said 2 weeks ago, you know, they can fall back and bring him back. But is he going to catch the ball with the game on the line in Buffalo next time? I don't know. I don't know.
Well, and that's the thing, and that's what's frustrating about this team, right? I mean, it's so funny this time of year because obviously you go through free agency, and now we're talking about the draft, and you'll hear people talk in terms of, do the Ravens need this to get themselves over the hump, or do the Ravens need that to get themselves over the hump? And they've had Super Bowl caliber rosters in recent years. I mean, you can't have the regular season success that they've had when Lamar has been upright and healthy, and point to this or that, oh, not having this certain position being better has been their downfall. They need their stars to play to perform in those moments. And this is where it's ironic because you mentioned Isaiah Likely, and kind of weighing, you know, what would it mean if Andrews is back? You know, and I said, you know, does Andrews see his role decrease a little bit and Likely gets ratcheted up a little bit more? In a very ironic way, there's certainly some irony with the fact that Nestor, who caught the touchdown right before Mark Andrews dropped the 2-point conversion, Isaiah Likely made a really nice sliding catch in the end zone. I mean, great, you know, great play from Lamar and Likely, but Likely was the one who, if Andrews catches the 2-point conversion, which was not some highlight catch that he had to make, and the Ravens win in overtime, let's say,
And then go win the Super Bowl.
we're talking about that Lamar to Likely. I'm not saying it's quite Flacco to Jacoby Jones, but it's still somewhere in that space in terms of a really clutch, massive play with 1.5 minutes to go in a game that you trailed by 8. So there you go. I mean, as much as we're kind of debating where Mark Andrews fits now, where he fits in terms of trade value, what he would be for another team, you know, this year, next year, beyond, you know, all those different things. You know, with Likely, I mean, you have a guy who set career highs and catches receiving yards and touchdown receptions. I mean, he's an ascending player, and like I said, he's 4.5 years younger than Andrews. So that doesn't mean he's necessarily going to become a first team All Pro, but I think we saw when Andrews hurt his ankle in November of 23. Go look at what Likely's numbers were down the stretch. I mean, he was very Mark Andrews-esque in terms of the production.
Well, and it
So.
also didn't diminish the offense as a
Sure,
whole, as a body, right?
right.
And
So,
that's for Todd Monken to decide, right?
right.
And Lamar, you know, and say, is this what we want, or do we want something else? And for the roster, if it means them getting a cornerback in the third round that they like, I mean, again, it's going to be for a player, right? Like, you know, it's Eric's going to say, I want that player now instead of the fourth round pick in 2027, because we know he has a job for life. A lot of GMs don't think like that in 26 other places, right?
Yeah.
So around here, because the owner's in the pie and everybody's a chosen son and a nephew to him, that this place operates differently and they think about it differently. And, I would say for the Liars' Luncheon, and getting back to that, by the way, Luke Jones is here at Baltimore Luke. You can find us both out at Baltimore Positive and at AM 1570 if you're out on the podcast and out on YouTube or anywhere else that you get what we do. The notion that the Liars' Luncheon produced this moment for you, which was Eric still dangling, that's a message to the other teams as they see it in their twist, because everybody
Sure.
watches everybody else's press conferences, right? Because, I mean, that's the way Harbaugh thinks about it, but they've left the door open and all of that. But otherwise, this is a lot. We haven't mentioned Justin Tucker in 30 minutes. You and I have been talking about
Yeah.
it. Did that come up?
It did. It did. I mean, look, I think everyone knew there wasn't, you know, the NFL investigation, they've leaned on that for better or for worse, however you feel about it. They've leaned on that. As I said to you,
That's the playbook, right? I mean, literally,
I
that's
mean,
the
it
playbook.
is. At the same time, you also have to recognize that this is your last truly great opportunity to come away with a replacement for Justin Tucker, right? Whether you're talking about, whether it means a fifth round pick, a sixth round pick, whatever it might be, you look at the top kickers in this draft, which, I'm not going to sit here and say that I am intimately familiar with 10 different kickers, but Ryan Fitzgerald from Florida State is regarded by many as the best kicker in this draft. My point is, even if the NFL investigation drags on another month, 2 months, whatever the hypothetical scenario is with that, or maybe it conveniently finishes on Saturday of the draft when they draft their replacement. Yeah, that would be kind of a cozy way to put a bow on this whole saga. But the point is, can you afford to not draft a kicker, or at the very least, not sign a high priority undrafted kicker like Justin Tucker was 13 years ago, at a time where they weren't convinced that they were replacing Billy Cundiff, but they certainly had it on its mind that it was a possibility after what had happened in Foxborough the previous January. So I think that's where, to me, day three of the draft is going to be very telling about where the Ravens stand with Justin Tucker right now. If you use a fifth round pick on a kicker, that doesn't mean necessarily that they're cutting Justin Tucker that same day. But I think that tells you what the expectation is, because this team, say what you want about whether they whiff on a certain pick, or whether they value late round picks too much, or any of that kind of stuff. This isn't a team that's in the business of just throwing away a draft pick, that if they have every intention of keeping Justin Tucker, they're probably not drafting a kicker then, right? Or they're not putting that kind of a priority on it.
How many
So,
kickers will be drafted in your two,
I mean,
three?
it's usually mu not much more than two or three.
Right.
I
Okay.
mean,
So
most
in
years,
their
that's at
mind,
most.
because they think, and John hates to be called a special teams coach. I like to call him one. But Randy Brown, they are maniacal about finding this next kicker,
They've done
and
their
they
homework.
will have no problem pulling a trigger on a fourth round draft pick to get a kicker if they believe in a kicker.
I mean,
If they're ready to make a move here, which
sure. I mean,
they should be ready to make a move.
if they truly think like if the guy they're drafting, if they have the conviction that they think that guy's going to be the next Justin Tucker,
Well,
which
they don't want
is
to get the second best kicker, is what I'm saying. Whoever their
sure.
guy is, even if their guy's the second best kicker and the
Well,
Texans take the wrong guy or whatever, like I'm just saying, right?
but that's where you also need to be measured, and that's where Eric, and it's something to his credit, like for example, the Ravens, when they drafted Lamar Jackson, they had an idea that he was going to be there at the end of the first round, right? I mean, they drafted Hayden Hurst before Lamar
Yeah, I was
Jackson.
going to say that
So,
whole thing is bizarre to me that if they love Lamar so much, they wouldn't have taken him at 27.
well,
Like, that's just a crazy, I mean,
but,
not.
and look, is there always some luck, and is there always some unknown that's going to happen? No question about it. However, part of the draft is not just evaluating the players and ranking the players the way that you feel they should be ranked. Eric's talked about this. Part of the draft is also trying to anticipate, trying to research, trying to talk to others around the league to try to figure out where you think other guy where you think other teams are evaluating players. So that's where you go into it and you say, and I'll throw another kicker name out there, because I've seen some people mention Ben Sauls from Pitt. He's kicked it the place formerly known as Heinz Field, which we know is a very difficult place to kick. The Ravens might love him because he's had a good college career. He's kicked in a very difficult outdoor stadium, although, fully acknowledging he's not playing games at Pitt in December and January like the Steelers play there. But maybe that's your guy. Now, yeah, if you really were so hell-bent, so determined, so obsessed with making sure you got your guy, could you hypothetically spend a fourth round pick? I suppose. I mean,
Sebastian Janikowski.
well, the Ravens used a fourth round pick on Jordan Stout a couple years ago. Remember when they had six fourth round picks? Or, however, if you don't think he's that kind of guy, if you think that he's got a really high upside, but he's raw and that tamps down his draft value, maybe you feel you can get him in the sixth round. The Ravens right now, if you look at their draft capital, they have four sixth round picks right now. And now that's not to say that you wait for that 212th overall, but maybe you use 183 on them. Maybe you use your very first six round pick on a kicker. So, and again, I'm speaking in hypotheticals here. It ultimately comes down to how you evaluate these guys, where you think other teams rank these guys, and you've got to take some calculated risks. You've got to be measured about it, right? I mean, the worst thing, and you mentioned Sebastian Janikowski. Look, Janikowski had a really good career. Did that ever justify him being a first round pick? Of course not, because no kicker is worth a first round pick. But, I mean, at the same time, if it's someone that you feel can be every bit as good as what Justin Tucker is at this point in his career on the field, then obviously has the upside of being a decade plus younger and all of that, then by all means, take them. And don't wait to the seventh round if you're afraid you're not going to get them. Maybe it's the fifth round pick that you have. So, but I think for the Ravens, even if you are behind closed doors trying to keep as open of mind as possible about Tucker, you'd really love to not be have to part ways with them. You're wondering, maybe you've gotten some inkling of what the investigation's going to, I don't know, right? I mean, again, I'm spitballing here. At the same time,
And every time you say investigation, I just have to laugh. So
I
I'm
know,
laughing out
but
loud.
I Nestor, I get it, but I'm not saying it has the utmost integrity when the NFL's investigating, but it's something that's going on right now. But at the
I'll hang
same
my hat
time,
on Julie Sharper. How about that?
sure, I'm not,
I think she did some investigating.
I don't disagree, but I'm trying to present the whole picture of how the Ravens are viewing this thing. But understanding that there's at best some major unknown as far as what might be uncovered by the league, whether it makes Tucker look better, worse, or the same. At the same time, you don't want to be in a position where you say, we're good. We don't need to draft a kicker. Well, maybe we'll bring in some guy that kicked in the UFL this spring. But then more comes out about Tucker, and you get to the point where you say, we can't do this. You don't want to be in a position where you don't have a replacement, right? You don't want to be in a position where you're picking up someone off the trash heap in the way that some fans wanted them to do last November when Justin Tucker was struggling to the degree that he was. You don't want to be in that position. So that's where I look at this thing and say, I mean, how can you afford to not take a kicker this next weekend in the draft? Or at the very least, someone that you're given a nice hefty bonus to as your top priority rookie free agent to come in and be at the very least, serious competition for your, disgraced kicker right now. So, or you draft someone and Justin Tucker's cut 2 days later. I mean, that scenario is entirely more than plausible, right? I mean, but I think I said all along to you when this all came out, if the Ravens weren't going to move on from him 2 days after the banner original report came out, oh, and didn't come, didn't release him after the subsequent, victims came forward, then to me, I pointed to the draft as kind of the next major checkpoint that the Ravens were going to try to let this play out, regardless of how you feel about the NFL investigating it. But the Ravens were going to do their homework to make sure that they got a replacement that they liked on the field before moving on. So I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm not saying that people should be okay with that. I'm saying where it is right now. I mean, it's the reality, and perception is reality for a lot of people right now in terms of not liking how the Ravens have handled this, and that's completely okay. I respect that opinion. But for me, if they come out of the weekend and there's no kicker, then I really start to wonder, maybe Justin Tucker, maybe they are planning to keep him, as you started suggesting that
Well, he's on
possibility.
the team right now. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
he's on
So,
the team until he isn't, right?
he
I
hasn't
mean that.
done anything that's made them get rid of him yet. So,
Sure.
including missing kicks.
Sure. Well, and that was always the part of this that to me, you draft someone, and even if you're trying to at least present some semblance of giving him some due process and the benefit of the doubt and go looking into this more and more, there was always the cover of saying, look, Justin, in addition to all of that, you weren't very good last year. So we've got to move on.
Yeah, Charlie
And
Morton, the Orioles are going to move on from him because he's not good enough. And it has
right.
nothing to do with anything. And
So,
like
yeah.
that's a performance. We're talking about Mark Andrews. You dropped the ball with the season on the line, dude. You
Sure.
walked out the side door and you got a commercial on a military commercial. It's crazy. But you know, I would say with the Tucker thing, this is where I get ishy on this because I haven't said much. I mean, I really haven't. I still go back to being sitting in Pizza John's with Jen Marsh and she hands me the phone and I'm reading it and you're tweeting it and Chris Pike is texting me and friends are texting me and
Yeah.
I'm reading it. And by the time I got done reading it, I went to the bathroom. I came back and Tucker had already called the media scumbags. And I didn't like that. And I really don't like that. Especially when they have a liars luncheon that, you know, people like me get boxed out of. So when it comes to like blaming the media and, playing that game, I don't play that manure, you know? So, like, for him, when the time comes that I really opine about it, my dear Justin Tucker, don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out. I've only spoken to in the framework of these 16 accusations, I've only spoken to two people connected, two people connected, right? And obviously I've spoken to Julie Sharper at length. And I know what I need to know. I know enough around town and enough people telling me for years I was not one of the people that heard the rumors and whatnot, but I know how they operate. I know how Eric DaCosta operates. I have firsthand experience with taking him information about players being drunk in the middle of my radio show on Monday night, so drunk that they had to be cut off, and how little concern they had for that human. HR getting him onto the field, whether he was getting hit over the head with bottles in Washington, D.C. in the middle of the night with players cavorting early in the season to piss the coach off to get the tackle benched. I mean, I remember all of this stuff. And I remember going to them, and, you know, he's a really good kicker, as my wife said a couple months ago, you know, after all the scandal broke. He's a really good kicker. And that's kind of the way they operate. And I've seen it. So I can't say that I am disappointed by it as a guy who spent 30 years invested in this franchise and trying to shine a light on their better angels while ignoring Ray Lewis in handcuffs, ignoring, you know, Ray Rice literally getting his wife to lie, like all the owner running from me on the veranda, which you witnessed last year. So, like, just in a general sense, the accountability. And the arrogance that they have and the accountability they lack and the status that they've achieved to have a gated community with, you know, full security around them at all times to ward them off from any of the dust, you know, the smoke that comes from this. You know, what they've got this very measured. Whatever they're going to do, they're already going to do it. And Steve doesn't care. At all. Sashi doesn't care. It's not costing anybody their job. Didn't cost anybody their job last time except for Ray Rice. Even though they all lied. They were all in on it, in on the deed, knowing the crime. And they didn't care. They didn't care. So that's why they don't want me out there in the middle of a liar's luncheon where Chad's picked who's going to ask the questions and hands out Sashi Brown doing, you know, after dinner drinks in Florida to speak to the media and stuff like that. Just the cowardice shows up and it's evident for anyone looking for how the organization feels, behaves, works, sells. You know, you feel it. And the Tucker thing is if they were done with Tucker, they would have said, we're done with Tucker. If they were done with him as a kicker, they could have been done with him. If they were done with him as a human, they could have been done with him as a kicker, right? And they could just be a franchise. They don't have to play this week, as Ozzie says, right? Like, so they could get a kicker between now and Labor Day if
Yeah.
they didn't want to be in business with Justin Tucker anymore. And the fact that they've gone Tammy Wynette, stand by your man. So yeah, they've been standing by him. So and God bless him if they think he's innocent. I know what he thought. He thought the media scumbags are out to get me, and that's what I'm going to tell my fans. I'm going to sing it to my fans. The Royal Farms people don't want to hear it. They got the chicken getting out the limo now. Justin Tucker's done his last psychoanalysis on a couch for the chicken people. So, I mean, the chicken people have run from him. I know enough that I wouldn't have made him my spokesperson, and I told the Royal Farms people that. But they haven't run from him, dude. He's still their kicker today. As you and I sit here, he's their kicker. And they can, as Potsy once said, sit on it. And they own it. If they wanted to get rid of him, they could have blamed it on football. And they haven't. Therefore, I'm not convinced they're drafting a kicker. They might. If they don't get the right kicker, Justin Tucker will be their kicker on Monday morning. And you know what? Luke, I'll be outraged. And I'll watch the games, and you'll buy the tickets, and go to the sit in the seats, and everybody will, like Ray Lewis went to the Hall of Fame after, and played a long career. Justin Tucker will kick field goals in this league. Steve Bisciotti knows that. John Harbaugh knows that. Eric DaCosta knows that. You know that. He will kick again in this league. They all do. So why not for me? I guess that's. I don't know. I'm talking to people in Cleveland all week. I had Mike Regei on and Bernie McKinney and Munch Bishop. Deshaun Watson's still under contract, even though they brought Joe Flacco in. Like the league has no concerns. I don't know. I think they're Teflon.
I mean, you kind of just nailed it. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that, that I have any comfort level with the Justin Tucker situation, or, all the allegations that, 16 alleged victims and all of that. But ultimately, if you're the Ravens, you've got to live with the repercussions if you do keep him, right? And the message that sends to the female percentage of your fan base, that is, if it's not 50-50, it's at a very high level. I mean, the NFL has put out research about how much of their fan base is women compared to other
How
sports
many people
and
took
all
their
that.
Ray Rice jerseys down there 10 years ago
Yeah,
that are Ray's coaching football a mile from their campus, man?
but you just, but you just hit on it. What were the repercussions for how poorly they handled the Ray Rice scenario? What are the repercussions
Kevin Byrne got a press box named after him up in the corner.
what are the repercussions when you see situations like this play out around the
Dick
league?
Cass kept his job, $2 million a year for a decade
So
after Ray
that's where
Rice.
I look at this, and I mean, in Cleveland, yes, was there a very sizable portion of the fan base that was unhappy with the Deshaun Watson acquisition and how the Browns willingly took that on? Not just willingly, they gave the guy an unprecedented, historic, fully guaranteed contract. They traded away, what, three first-round picks, whatever it was?
They pissed off Steve Bisciotti doing it.
But yet,
They did a deal so bad that they pissed off all the other billionaires in the room.
and look, Cleveland's kind of a tough example because we've certainly seen our share of games there. We've been to our share of games there where it wasn't a full stadium. But when Joe Flacco was taking them to the playoffs 2 years ago, seats were full. Stadium was full. I mean, heck, they're getting a new stadium in the suburb, in the burbs, right? I mean,
There's an
so.
old proverb that shows up on my timeline sometimes, and now that I'm saying it out loud, it'll show up. But it's a Japanese proverb about when you get on the subway and you realize you're on the wrong train, get off as soon as possible because the longer you stay on the train on the wrong road, the longer it's going to take to get back, right? And Cleveland last year had the opportunity to just wash their hands of Deshaun Watson in the way that we're 30 minutes into this, right? The Ravens can wash their hands of Mark Andrews dropping the ball and not showing up and just say we're done because we just don't believe in it anymore. They could walk away from Justin Tucker at any point and say, we could do better on the field. We could certainly do better off the field. And they could have walked from that in February and they wouldn't have to answer any more questions about it. But instead, they're Tammy Wynette-ing this. And they stood by Ray Lewis to the point where Art flew down to Atlanta and stood with Ray in a courtroom, right? They stood by Jamal Lewis, right? And that thing is laughable at this point. What, you know, as I'm wearing a Curio shirt here, but like, I mean, the prejudice and the racism in Georgia that Ray Lewis endured in all, just all of it. Ed Garland, who was on my show many times, and then the Ray Rice fiasco. I you know, I they have scandals in their own building that don't make their way out of their building that have made their way to me. Real scandals. It's awful stuff that goes on in their place. That if the NFL wants to call me and really investigate things, I could tell them some things, including throwing a legitimate media member out and bullying me and having everybody in on it and just look the other way and lie to me. That, like, I dealt with that at the highest level as an FCC license owner, a four-decade decorated sports media member that they allow you in and not me. And they're picking their media people. They bullied me. They lied to me on the back end of Ray Rice, on the back end of everything I know when I have gone to their senior management with issues within their organization that should be HR related. Drunk players showing up in Harford County, so drunk that I can't air it the next day. That happened for real, for real. And I called them and said, Kevin Byrne didn't care. Chad Steele, I mean, are you kidding me? You know, like, I spent time there, lots of time, a lot of my life there, a lot of my money there, a lot of my attention there, a lot of my heart there. So I get it. I know how they operate. They're sleazy. I've called them sleazy. And that kicker is still on the franchise, still a part of the team. It's so sleazy, they won't let me in to ask questions. They really want no questions about it. They're pushing it onto the league, which is a joke that the league would investigate anything because the league won't investigate anything. They call me. So, like, if they want a real, a thorough investigation. So, I've seen how they operate. It would not shock me that he's their kicker. He'll be somebody's kicker. I guess that's my point for the Shield and the league is that we're all worked up at this draft next week. They're going to draft more criminals next week. So, you know, I hope there's not an Aaron Hernandez in there anywhere. But I mean, the Belchers and the Hernandezes and the Dan Snyders and what they did to Kaepernick and what they did to Gruden and just on and on and on and on what they've done to me. Ryan Ripken and the Ed Block Courage Awards have tables on Radio Row at the Super Bowl. And after 35 years, I've been disappeared to the El Salvadorian. You know, actually, I have a pretty good time doing a couple of Super Bowls, so I don't want to get too worked up about that. But this is how they've handled me personally, my business, everything that I've been about, everything I've stood by them about, what they did with their $600 million 2 years ago. Like, it's a pretty sleazy operation all the way down. You know, see Goodell and Daniel Snyder and just all the what they do with franchises. I can hold my Baltimore Colts, San Diego Chargers, Oakland Raiders, Houston Oilers belts up. You know, like, so I mean, I don't mean the soliloquy today, but if anybody thinks that they're done with Justin Tucker, if they were done with Justin Tucker, this would have been a lot easier to be done, but they're not done with Justin Tucker. They're looking to dress it up, continue to blame the media, say it was all a big misunderstanding. And, you know, he's still a great kicker. He's a great guy. He's a great guy. And that's the way this, you know, it's going to go that way for somebody when they hire him because he's going to kick for somebody.
We'll see. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and defend the National Football League, but at the same time, they're the most popular entertainment entity in this country, short of Taylor Swift, probably.
And they're so
So.
powerful that they can have a Hall of Fame kicker cavorting around the city, behaving in the fashion that it was reported, alleged, that he is behaved in, and be completely impervious to it. Because if you called Kevin Byrne, or you called Chad Steele, or you called Dick Cass, or you told Eric DaCosta, or his wife knew, or anybody that's in the community that uses $150 an hour spas to legitimately massage people. I know I've met people who think there's no such thing as a legitimate massage. I mean, it's insane. You didn't know a lot about it because you've never had a massage, but like, this is scandalous, dude. It's
Who's saying
scandalous.
it's
It
not?
was scandalous 2 months ago. It's scandalous today. That's it. That's all I got for you today. But I hope you enjoy the draft.
And but I'll go back to what I said. We also know this is a team that uses every edge, every bit of paranoia, every bit of misdirection, whether we're talking about injuries on the
The
injury
art of
report.
war.
So from that standpoint, regardless of any perception of morality or the doing the right thing or any of that,
Zero tolerance. I just got to put
is
that
it
in.
easier? Is it easier for them to find their next kicker while Justin Tucker is still on the roster from a from a football standpoint, from a leverage standpoint, in some way in their minds?
In
Probably,
April?
yeah. Probably. I don't I, look, the number of things I've heard people, whether we're talking Ravens, Orioles, whatever it might be, the number of things that I've heard justified for some alleged competitive advantage, it's hilarious. Now, let me be clear, I'm not
It's
saying
as
this.
negligible as signing a guard who's no good, who hasn't been good enough to make your team, to a contract 3 weeks after he blows a double deuce
I mean,
on a
I
DUI.
Ben Cleveland's a perfectly fine reserve guard. I wouldn't say that he's no good,
But you
but
didn't need to go sign him.
sure.
If you were
Sure.
zero, if you were
Well,
concerned
that's why
about
I
him as
said
a human being, he'd
that's
be in
why
a
I said
program right now, quietly getting fixed.
that's why I
And
said to
then
you that
you think about signing him later because that's what you do with employees who have problems. Or have
yeah.
those kind of issues.
That's why I
I
said
know,
to
I've
you
been
at
a guy.
that's why I said to you at the time that I found that to be rather illuminating, that they did that as quickly as they did.
They don't care. They didn't care a decade ago when their player was out in front of half their fan base, so hammered I couldn't put it on the air. Like, they don't care. They really don't. Steve doesn't care at all. I found that out the hard way. I mean, I gave him a lot of credit for having integrity he lacked. Go read my book. I wrote fiction about how they were allegedly behaving. And this is before Ray Rice. In the aftermath of Ray Rice, it's fallen down the mountain. See the liar's luncheon that I was, that they've lied to everyone in the world about whether I'm a media member or not, so that I'm not there to ask questions for sport because it makes them feel good. Not because it's the right thing to do, not because they have any integrity or morality, not because they have any respect for their fan base, PSL owner, community leader, sports media person, person with good questions, person that's written books about them. Like none of that mattered to Dick Cass. None of that mattered. No, nothing matters to them except that the check's clear. That's all that matters to them. And that they can Johnny Bravo up Sashi Brown as being a community leader and a board sitter. And like none of it matters. It's meatballs. It just doesn't matter. They're getting $400 million in national television revenue that pays for everything, and then all the rest of it's just gravy for Uncle Steve. And the next bonus that John's going to get, or the next thing they're going to have to do with Lamar, like it's a turnkey made operation with that just prints money, and they go to
And
bed
everyone
every
eats it
night.
up. And everyone continues to eat it up.
They go to bed every night knowing that. So we don't. I don't delve much into this, but on the day after the Liars Luncheon, and Jackie Robinson Day, and like all of that, while people that look like me are sitting in El Salvador in jails, and nobody seems to care, and Rubenstein's gotten thrown out of the Kennedy Center by this goof running the country, and he can't even speak up about democracy, owning the Magna Carta, but he'll be there on bobblehead night to throw you a hat on Saturday night. All right, Luke, anything else on the Liars Luncheon while you got me? I'm so fired up. I should write right now. I should let it come out my fingers. Yes.
I'll have a 12 Ravens thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com on some of the other mainly minutiae. I mean, there
Dude, we've
wasn't.
done so much on pitching in the Orioles, so much on hitting on the Orioles, so much on the draft, so much on their needs, so much on their home. I mean, nobody's covering this better than you and me. I mean, really. I mean, honestly. I mean, I mean that. So, going into this, it's sort of a weird draft, and from where they're drafting later in the evening and all of that. But, I think that they've walked away from Justin Tucker pretty well. I think that they can. They're a Super Bowl contender no matter what they do next week. So I do think it's just blocking and tackling for them at this point, right? Literally.
Yeah, I mean they need to add some depth pieces, and they've got 11 picks, and I fully expect them to draft, Eric said, a safety, a corner. I mean, it'd be more surprising if they didn't. They're going to draft defensive line. They're going to draft an offensive lineman or two. I fully expect, and there you go, edge rusher, and there you go. And we'll see how good those players are. You never know, but you said it. I mean, they're a Super Bowl caliber roster already, just needing some depth here and there. Maybe one starter. I don't even know if the first round pick will be a starter day one, because what spot? So, we're counting down to that, and might not be the sexiest draft when you're picking 27th, but knowing their history, regardless of all the other issues that you just monologued about, they're good at picking football players, and chances are they're going to come away with at least a handful of guys that are going to help them here over the next 3 or 4
I
years.
put that in the excerpt at Baltimore Positive. They're still really good at picking. Just, let them know I'm fair. I'm always fair with them. So I'm fair with the Orioles as well. And fair was expectations being high. We're gonna be over on Thursday at the Beaumont, where the expectations are always high. The food's gonna be unbelievable. My wife got that pork tenderloin thing they do over there with the barbecue and the cream spinach and the mac and cheese and that little onions. Oh my God, it's delicious. I'm not going to get that for lunch though. I'm going to go something burgery for lunch. It is a crab cake tour. I'm going to have a crab cake for lunch. Got a couple of great guests coming out to Beaumont on Thursday. We will have the Magic 8-Ball scratch-offs as well as the Back to the Future scratch-offs that we're going to be doing in the coming weeks. I'm wearing my Coco shirt. We're there on the 30th. We're at Cooper's North next Wednesday, the 23rd, doing a turn for LLS and all my friends in the Schultz family. Many of you Terps remember Curtis Schultz, his brother and his father, who was my one-time athletic director at Dundalk High School. See if Ron Schultz can sing the Dundalk High alma mater. I'm going to challenge him on that. Wonder if he can sing the DeMatha alma mater because his kid went to DeMatha and played for Morgan Wootten. That'll be a great show. That's next Wednesday, the 23rd at Cooper's North in Timonium. Also have some other great guests happening. On the 30th, we're going to be at Coco's. Jamie Costello's coming out. Really looking forward to talking some Little League and some life after media. He's going to Costello me some stories from what I understand. My thanks to Luke for getting up early and staying up late. The Liars Luncheon. We're monitoring all things Orioles all weekend as the Reds come to town this week as well. And a shout out to Ed Mullen and the good folks who do robotics for kids in Baltimore City in STEM programs. We talk about education all the time around here. Ed Mullen's doing a turn here in Timonium at Wonderfly on Wednesday night. It's called Luke, it's called Beer and Bots. That's beer and robots, right? Guess what the part I'm going for is.
The beer.
I am there for the
There you
beer.
go.
That is correct. I am the master of ceremonies. I love when they call me master. I'll be emceeing the duties there for the Beer and Bots folks. So come buy some tickets for that. That's on Wednesday night over at the Wonderfly as well. Draft week, Orioles home, trouble brewing. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive, even when I rant and rave.